I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available, and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
As we recognize the service of America's men and women in uniform, let's also honor the families who sacrifice so much every day. Military families endure frequent deployments and separations. They carry on while their loved ones are sent into harm's way and wait patiently for their safe return. If you really want to honor a veteran, look for ways to support their families and thank them for their sacrifices. Go to legion.org/honorveterans to find out how you can help.
This is Montel Williams. As a U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran, I know the sacrifice that our servicemen and women make for us every single day. If you're a veteran or a military member transitioning out of the service, help is available to you. The U.S. Department of Labor can help you get training, find a good job, or further your education. Contact the Veterans Employment and Training Service at 866-487-2365 or visit dol.gov/vets.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
And we continue on a Wednesday edition, a hump day edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Privileged to be joined by the Director of Strategy at Boulder Crest Retreats, Josh Goldberg. And so just want to say thank you for spending this time with us, and truly appreciate it. I've got an email that kind of takes us in the direction I want to go, so let me read it to you. Hey, Mac, this is the second time I've heard of Boulder Crest Retreats, and I can't tell you how impressed I am with it. For years and years, the only thing I've heard of is medication, go to group, or some alternative therapies that I don't really want to be a part of. You know, some of them involve pretty heavy drugs, and I'm simply looking for something that fits me, and I'm very intrigued by this. I would be curious, after listening to Ken Falk the first time and now Josh, to understand more about the program. What do they do? I heard Ken say that you have to be off medications and alcohol to be involved in the program. Once you get there, how does the program work? How did they launch me in a different direction? I would love to be part of it. And more importantly, the reminder to me today that people need me has put a smile on my face. And I'm really excited about giving back. I'm just not there yet. Can Josh talk about what they do with guys or girls once they show up to the retreat? So can you walk us through generally the retreat, Josh?
Sure, and I'd say a couple things. I think the first is if anybody listening, you know, is interested in taking part, the easiest thing to do is to email Kevin at Boulder Crest Retreat, B-O-U-L-D-E-R, CrestRetreat.org. So Kevin at BoulderCrestRetreat.org. And just email Kevin to register and for interest. Kevin is a Marine and a remarkable human being. So that's one thing. You know, in terms of the program, so our Warrior Path program, and I'd love to talk more about kind of what we're trying to do more broadly. So
sure.
Specifically, the Warrior Path program, you know, takes at its core a training-based approach to combat stress, to PTS, whatever you want to call it. But it doesn't require a clinical diagnosis to take part in it, which is why we say, but combat stress, not PTS. Essentially, it's this idea that you know where you want to go. You just have no idea how to get there, right? You feel stuck. And obviously you struggle. I think from a medication perspective, it's obviously assumed, right, that most people, if they have sought help, are on some medications, and that's fine, right? I think for us, we need a certain degree of mental acuity. Like, you just have to be able to be engaged and present at some level. And so if you're in withdrawals from alcohol because you can't drink while you're with us, or if you're smoking weed every day and you can't smoke weed with us, and that's going to create major problems, is why for us we would say, okay, you know, you need to go spend like 30 days off of this stuff and then come, because we can't have people detoxing. I mean, alcohol detox is incredibly dangerous. So we just, that's the rationale, right? It's not a judgment. I think it's important to say that. But if you're on some meds, like, it is what it is. It's the nature of our system, and it would be presumed that you would be on meds if you've had any encounters with our traditional mental health system. So we view Warrior Path as an 18-month program. It's initiated with a 7-day training, with the 7-day training program at the actual retreat. And right now what we're working on is actually doubling down and creating one on the West Coast as well, so we can expand our capacity. And essentially, if there's a couple ways I could characterize it. We generally don't talk a ton about what we do, not because it's magical or mystical, but because there's something about kind of coming and understanding, right, like, this is a space, this is a program that was created primarily by combat veterans for combat veterans, and there's an element of trust that has to go into that without kind of walking through every part of the schedule. But as a general rule, you know, what we're trying to do is, using the base of a post-traumatic growth type framework, is to begin by helping folks understand that, you know, what's possible, right? We talked about this idea of expectation. And I think, you know, my expectation, Stockdale's expectation of his fellow POWs, right, my expectation of veterans, is that you're going to come home, and Ken's too, and be as productive at home as you were on the battlefield. That you are going to continue to be a servant to others, that you are going to continue to be your brother's keeper, just like you were in the military. And that idea, and I think I mentioned earlier, is called expert guiding, right? The capacity to be that person in that commercial, right? When it's like, oh, if you have a veteran in your life and ask them, first of all, that act can be done for any group of people. And the second thing is, can you be somebody who is the one who says to somebody, are you okay? And they're like, no. And you say, all right, well, what's going on? And you can actually listen to that person and you can help them. And that's really, you know, from a training curriculum perspective, like from a terminal learning object perspective, that's our goal, is to enable each person who comes into our program to create an individual plan, right, that allows them to transform their time of struggle into strength and to be of service to themselves, their family, their tribe, their community, their fellow veterans, and their country. And that's the TLO. And so in order to do that, you've got to kind of understand this principle, right, that struggle is inherently valuable, right? You have to kind of, like, when we'll talk about it, nothing is force-fed, but it's just recognizing the principle of, this is the value of struggle, right? And this is what happens when you struggle, to your mind, to your body, to your brain, and so forth, to your heart and your soul, when you struggle, right? And then this is what optimal living looks like. So there's education piece of just trying to understand, like, okay, this is where I am, this is where I want to be, and just getting a sense of where everybody's at. So talk about that as this idea of meeting people where they are. We don't spend a lot of time looking at war stories. We will spend some time looking at kind of where people came from and how they made their way into the military. And we find that to be pretty instructive. And that's not done in a therapeutic sense. It's done in a sense of, like, okay, I got to really understand. And Mac, like, you're a good example, is if someone was talking to you and you were struggling and they never asked you, the fact that your parents got divorced, at some level that had an influence on you. Right. So we do think, because we're big believers in nurture over nature. So we do think that often the way I describe being trained as a kid to achieve, to make my parents proud, to make my family proud, my culture proud, that stuff hangs with you. It kind of messes with your capacity to see clearly. So we will look at that stuff. And that's really an effort to understand, okay, we met you where you are, which is not where you want to be. And now we got to figure out, how the hell did you get there, dude? Right? What was your path to get there? And we look at understanding that. And then what we really focus much of the program on is figuring out where the hell you want to go. And that could be as simple as I want to be a really good father. I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be somebody who can serve in my community meaningfully. Or I just want to wake up and feel a sense of peace, right? And then what we work towards is how you get that done. And we use a bunch of activities. We use nature. We'll go kayaking. And those activities serve as platforms for the purpose of having discussions and reflection about these subjects. And so the best way to describe it, I'd say, is it's part philosophy, part psychology, part spirituality in the sense of, like, kind of walking your path and the idea of what your life is about. There's nothing faith-based about our program.
Okay.
At all. It's not anti-faith, but it's not, it's not bedded in Jewish principles, although I am present for most of them. And that's really the idea. And then the support over 18 months is twofold. It's accountability related to how are you doing? How are you doing on your goals that relate to your larger target, 2,500 meter target? And also it's training, right? It's understanding, like, it's the story of the POWs, right? It's reading about that. It's understanding that. It's understanding about people who've been through the Holocaust. So it's education and training to get how the journey you're on actually relates to this human condition. And in the midst of all of that, I think Ken spoke about it, are these warrior techniques that have been used for thousands of years that allow you to regulate, right? So the way I would describe it is if you looked at a sine wave chart, essentially the way that you're trained to be in combat is either at 0 or 10, right? It's either you're fully engaged or you're kind of just bored out of your mind. And it's a very extreme way of living. But nobody ever teaches you how to put a dimmer switch on, which is why you go from woe to go very quickly. Somebody says something you don't like, and they look at you. Then you react, and people look at you like you have two heads. And so we do things like meditation. We do things like archery and other practices that are all designed to help you regulate, self-regulation, so you can actually determine how you go into the world. And you mentioned earlier, I was reading about it last night, the physical and the mental exercises that the POWs engaged in, right? Thinking about, like, one guy trying to memorize the name of every POW who was in the camp. One guy who was retelling the stories of movies, like, minute by minute, right? These exercises designed to stimulate and keep the mind focused on things and keep it sharp, the same with the body. And so this isn't like military-style PT. We do have a cool partnership with TRX, which is obviously started by Steel,
right,
where we'll do TRX in the morning. But it's not – we're not trying to, like, destroy people. But the whole principle is to activate the system – to get out of a reaction posture, to be able to respond to life, and then to understand, right, in many ways, train people to understand, like, hey, this is life, right, and life happens, and you wake up in the morning, and some days you open the door, and life punches you in the face. Sometimes before you get out the door, you spill coffee on yourself, right? And it's like, are you going to let that ruin your day? Are you really going to let that ruin your day, or are you going to go change your pants, say, okay, that was what it was, and get in the car and go do whatever you were intent to doing? So I think that's probably, a good encapsulation, but a large part of our – we have a couple of concerns with the current approach. One would be that it's primarily catch and release, right? So you might go through a 12 treatment protocol. Most veterans will never complete it. But it's that you would go through something and kind of be like, all right, dude, you're good to go. Go out into the world. And we don't think it's quite that simple. And so 18 months to us is generally the point at which we would never return back to our old way of being. And so we support, we have monthly video conferences as a group. We do ad hoc coaching calls. So we do a lot of different things, and we're currently building a platform that allows people to access information, talk to each other, and stay connected. Because we think it's, at the core of it, one of the things that happens when you struggle is you often say, something's wrong with me, so I'm not okay, I'm alone, and nobody understands how I'm feeling. And I think part of what's really important, especially for a military community, but much less anybody, is just being connected to other human beings who you can call up and say, hey, I'm struggling with this, and they can help you. And so one of our commitments is that we're going to see it through to the finish line and ensure that people are successful. And what I would tell you, and it makes me, it's inspiring that the person who wrote talks about smiling. And I think when we hear the stories of people who really have put their life back together in a way that's much more in their own image and are serving other people and are helping, we take our alums and we go do service projects because the perception of veterans is, right, we know, like, the broken veteran story.
Right.
And so when we're like, hey, we're Bouldercrest, we're here to help, all of a sudden people are like, what? We thought you were, like, asking for donations and needed people to volunteer. It's like, no. What did you need? You need a barn built? Cool. All right, we'll handle that. And that, to me, is the ultimate of the ultimate. It's for us to know that the people that come through here are making an impact in their community, are changing the way people perceive veterans, not by yelling about it, but by simply doing and making people be like, huh, these dudes are different, right? Marines are different. And different in all the good ways. And So that's really the encapsulation. And I think what we're working toward is, you know, our view of the kind of traditional mental health approach is it's very much one that's based in symptomology, right, in pathology. So when someone would say, like, okay, you've struggled, someone puts a diagnosis on you, which inevitably makes you think something is wrong with you, right? It in some way gives you a sense that you've been diminished. And then we're going to medicate you and have you talk about this stuff, which generally doesn't make you feel much better. And it essentially leaves you as a diminished version of yourself. And you were sentenced to life to know you'll never be that guy you wanted to be. You'll never feel like you felt, right? You're never going to be that. You're forever diminished because you went to war. You're forever diminished because you went to the military. You're forever diminished because you were sexually assaulted. And we don't believe that, right? We fundamentally believe the only way to plus five is minus five, right? And that we don't want to go from minus five to minus three. That's not our vision of having a bunch of, like, people who aren't going to kill themselves but are miserable. And so we're working to expand to the West Coast. We're working on mobile training teams. We're working on finding partners who are credible partners who can understand. I mean, the lifetime commitment of a retreat is $50 to $100 million, the way we do it. It's a lot of money. But we are looking for partners in different parts of the country who are interested in replicating the model, who want our support, who want our guidance, who want our mistakes, that we've learned the hard way over 4 years. And so we are doing a conference on expansion in June for partners who are interested. So if people are interested, email me at josh@bouldercrestretreat.org about that. And then the other part of this is we are working with, attempting to work with the VA and the military to figure out at the different parts of the process, from basic training all the way through separation and transition, is what can we do to alter what's happening? Because clearly the system's not working properly. And, you know, whether it's the guy who is big, fit, and deployable and then isn't and then goes to a WTU and then ends up with a PTSD diagnosis and the next thing you know, it's like, what the hell happened to John, right? He's a shell of who he was. And we can't have that. And the military can't have that because it impairs the ability of the military to recruit exactly the type of people and Marines it wants in the future. And so that's our broader vision from the specific program. We're working on student guide, instructor guide, all of the things that would be very familiar to anyone who's been involved in training and curriculum efforts in the military, to allow us to scale this in a way where it becomes serious. And I think a good analogy is charter schools. You know, charter schools are never going to replace, in Dallas, where I grew up, they're never going to replace the Dallas Independent School District, right? It's too big. It's too entrenched. But what charter schools do is create choice, and they create a race to the top, right? Because if a parent can say to that, and by the way, right, money travels with students, right? So right. If that student gets $15,000 a year and that student selects a charter school, but the DISD is not getting that money. So the idea is, The school district, right, in this case, the mental health system, would look outside of itself and say, what the hell are those people doing that's attracting so many people? And how do we integrate that into what we do? And that's, you know, our challenge is to work with existing systems, which are well indoctrinated, to say, like, hey, what if we did this? Or what if you tried this? Because, you know, when you look at the mental health situation, it's not just the pathology. It's not just the medicine. You know, 13% of community providers who work with veterans are actually kind of capable, culturally attuned to be able to do that. But my hope is to democratize mental health, ultimately, to allow veterans not just to be that expert guide in their communities for fellow veterans, which is critical, but to be that expert guide in their communities, serving people in all different walks of life. And what we talk about is this idea, you know, we call our like, I'm a past guide, right? That's what we call ourselves. We're guides. We're not instructors. We're guides. And in the 80s, they had from teachers to troops. For troops to teachers. And our hope would be from grunts to guides, right? This principle of in this decimated, sad society, it's unleashing the power of 2.7 million people who damn sure should be the next greatest generation. And all of the skills and ability and the empathy and the leadership and the character of this community and unleashing it into our communities and seeing the exact same thing that we saw after World War II, which is a recreation, a rebuilding, a reinventing of what America stands for. Right on our core principles, which nobody knows better than the members of the United States military and the veterans. Right? You guys understand what the Constitution's about. You swore an oath to it. The rest of us didn't. I just born here. And I think that to me is like, if you said, like, well, how will I die a happy man? It'll be to know that veterans' influence and impact is being felt in every community in the country, that veterans are representing us at every level of government, veterans are running businesses, but also that just in day-to-day interactions, veterans still have their bearing, have their military bearing, and walk around the world and essentially, like, are pulling people off the ground, right, who are struggling and can't get up on their own.
Josh Goldberg, my guest here for a few more minutes as we head towards the top of the hour. Josh, I got a couple emails. Hey, Mac, I listened a couple weeks ago to Ken, and my viewpoint relative to the way to come home is changing as I listen to both these guys. I have a ranch in Montana. I heard Ken talk about mobile training teams. Is there somebody that I can contact to offer my place for their use? Because I truly think that the things Josh has spoken about this morning are the way to deal with PTS. I also love this idea of looking back at the Greatest Generation, looking back at guys who were prisoners of Vietnam, and thinking, if they can do it, so can I. They used it to get to a better place, so can we. And so it makes me reevaluate this morning again, as I did with Ken, how we're currently doing this, and is it of any good? I'm seriously in deep thought about friends of mine who have taken their own lives, who were probably not well served by getting into programs, and all they did was grind away in one spot, talking and talking and talking and being medicated. So I'm a huge supporter. How do I help? Who do I contact to offer my property for their use? So Ken spoke about mobile training teams and things like that. I don't know how close you guys are to actually doing that, but if somebody is interested in supporting what you're doing, Josh, what do they do? Who do they contact?
Yeah, and they can contact me. And Maggie, you can obviously support. I'm very humbled by what he said, and it does. I've certainly lost friends, military, and otherwise to suicide, and it is hard not to sometimes reflect, like, you know, gosh, if I had known this then, of course, it doesn't do that much good, but it is a reminder for each of us when we wake up each morning what the seriousness of the situation. And just how critical it is in every minute of every day, why, you know, and I love what I do, and I spend a lot of time doing it because I know that you know, I have to work harder than everybody else because we've got to get this sorted. But they can contact me at dosh@bouldercrestretreat.org. If you don't have time to write it down, just go to bouldercrestretreat.org, and if you click on my name on the bio page, it'll send you directly to my email, and just let us know. You know, I think for us, you know, Ken, and I'm sure he talked about some of his story, right? But Ken started AT Solutions when he retired, and he retired because they wouldn't let him go to Afghanistan. But he started it, A, to stay in the fight and, you know, to start with the Green Berets and Tora Bora and do technology development. But as the IED battle heated up, you know, Ken ended up having this company that grew to this incredible size. And it's always interesting when you reflect on that all things happen for a reason. And so when I think about the right person to be able to build what is a monstrous effort, right? Because you think about, I mean, I worked in oil, so I always think about in terms of infrastructure for like a solar company in a world where we have pipelines and distribution manufacturing and everything else for oil, right? Think about the similar thing with the mental health system, which is, you know, at our core, the most efficient way to do this is to train mental health professionals differently. And we will do that. But I often think that, you know, how fortunate we are to have a man like Ken in that place, because what we're trying to do is raise a lot of money. Because obviously it takes money and private money so we can do what's right, not what people ask us or tell us to do, to try to do that. So I would say to the listeners, you know, if you're able or if you know people who want to make a major fundamental investment in changing the nature of the way people come home from war and ensuring that our nation's veterans can truly thrive, right? Not cope, not survive, not exist, but thrive when they get home. I'd love for you to contact me. You know, we obviously love your support, and I think, it is important. You know, that's the fuel for our organizations, obviously resources. And certainly if you have places, you know, that's what we're trying to do is create this map of places and then continue to build the training programs so that we can scale it as efficiently, as effectively as possible. But it's daunting in the best way possible. And we have, you know, we don't have to look very far to realize what's at stake and what's possible. And I think that's the critical reminder here is to know, that you can sit on the sidelines and complain. But the quote that we're fond of and the one that I attribute to Ken, who, again, like, he's the person I admire most on this planet, is that he's the man in the arena, right? And he's been fortunate enough because he helped build the arena, and he brings some of the rest of us into the arena, and he lets us with our blood and our sweat and our tears, and we dare greatly, and we do what needs to be done, and we'll continue to do that. And it's an insanely passionate group of people who, are deeply committed and are called to do this work in some profound way. And I think if anybody who's listening can be part of that, obviously we would cherish that. And, it makes our life easier if Ken can focus less on fundraising and more on programming. It's a net benefit for all of us in this community. And he's most potent reminder to me of just what this community represents. And he's Navy, so he's not a Marine. He's the ladies department of the Marines, I guess.
We just call ourselves the men's department, and they know it. They're okay with that. So we don't have to pull the curtain all the way over.
Exactly.
So we allow them there.
And I think it's the reminder, and I don't think I wasn't that specific, right? But when you think of post-traumatic growth, and I think this is the part that's most compelling to me, what post-traumatic growth says is that when people go through incredibly difficult times, right, and have the opportunity or the obligation or that they just have to, right? It's just that this is what they got to do to stay alive, is to begin reflecting about what's true in their life. Is it says that growth often occurs in some or all of five areas. Deep relationships, right? The capacity to empathize with others and support others who are struggling, right? Personal strength, the idea that if I've been through this, I can go through anything. New possibilities, the idea that there is nothing that I can't achieve, and that the world as it is isn't the world as it has to be. Appreciation for life, a sense of gratitude about the small things, and spiritual existential change, this idea of talking and reflecting on the deepest questions of life. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Every single one of those, all five, are inherent to the combat experience, right? Because I'll be damned if you guys don't talk about life and death and what happens if you die and what your wishes would be and why you are here and why stuff happens, and to cultivate personal strength and to have relationships that are so deep you would die for another human being, and to appreciate the fact that you can, enjoy sleeping underneath the Humvee, right? Much less come home and not have to have a generator hum in your ear. And war is all about new possibilities, right? The idea of war is to fundamentally change the facts on the ground to contribute to a sense of peace and a change in the outcome. So the whole principles of post-traumatic growth are inherent to somebody who's been in the military and been in combat. And that's why, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. The straight line is a PTSD. It's PTG. Right. And I know it, and I know Mattis knows it, and that heartens me. But that's the point, right? The shortest distance between these two lines is not to go from being a hardy and fit and battle tested Marine who no one wants to come into contact with, right, to somebody who has post traumatic growth, right? Who's like, hell, I went through hell and I'm a stronger and better man, just like those POWs. It's not to come back and say, like, woe is me, right? That is not your way. That is not the way of the warrior, it is not the way of the Marine or any of the other services. And I know that. And that's what frustrates me, is that as this is as much an external situation of a story that is just false than anything else. And I think it's a reminder that for anybody who wants to get some insight into this, obviously you can come and watch our website and so forth and come to our programs, but Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, When Bad Things Happen to Good People by Harold Kushner, and The Lessons of the Hanoi Hilton are probably the three most profound books to read that are interesting on the subject of struggle and the inherent value of struggle.
Josh Goldberg, my guest this morning, he of Boulder Crest Retreat. I got another email, Josh. Mac, I'm blown away by all of this. I guess I have a question. How did we come to dwell on the amount of PTSD in World War II, the amount of PTSD, undiagnosed Vietnam, in terms of the way we treat it today? I've never heard it framed like this. It's never dawned on me, the Greatest Generation using World War II as a springboard to give more, to come back and do great things. Why is it framed this way? It seems like the framing of it invites you down this path of medication and therapy. Not that those aren't appropriate at given times, but I've never heard it framed the way Josh is framing it. Does he have a reason institutionally why we frame it this way? So, Josh, I think that there's merit in his point in terms of we don't hear it framed like this often. Why?
Well, I mean, the short answer, and it's a little like pithy, would be it was created by civilians, right? It was created by people who live in a construct where struggle is to be feared. And the best analogy I can give you is again, coming back to my upbringing as a Jew. Jews fast one day a year. It's called Yom Kippur. It's the Day of Atonement. So while, you know, Catholics confess every Sunday or whatever it is, Jews have one day a year where you're essentially asking for repentance. And you fast from sundown the night it starts to sundown the following day. 24 hours of fasting. It's not a big deal. But when you're at temple the night that starts and you leave, and people will look at you and they'll say, have an easy fast. And it always struck me as weird. Have an easy fast, right? I don't think it's supposed to be easy, right? Because you're supposed to be reflecting and repenting on the bad things you did that year that didn't honor who you were and what you stand for. And it's supposed to be hard. And it's supposed to be a challenge. It's supposed to be grueling. That mindset is the essential mindset of people who haven't come from a culture and been part of a culture where struggle and hardship is true. And I think in part it's this evolution and this ease of there's an app for everything, right? And this stuff, like really psychoanalysis is like early 1900s, really, from Freud, where it started to get into this kind of dissection of, you know, you're in love with your mother and kind of looking at all of this stuff is part of it.
Right.
And I think the other part of it is that the voices that did not dominate. And to be clear, Viktor Frankl, The Man's Search for Meaning, I had a major issue with Freud that they actually, he wrote him letters, and I haven't seen the letters, but he had major challenges with Freud. And if we had listened and allowed to dominate the voices of people like Viktor Frankl, right, a psychiatrist who was in the Holocaust, who went through it all, the voices of Harold Kushner, who was a counselor and then lost his son at 14, the voices of Rich Tedeschi, the father of post-traumatic growth, discharged from the Marine Corps and on the discharge paper said he is no longer of any value to the Marine Corps, who drunk himself to death, right? So Rich was a bereaved child and had to find his own way. Right. If the voices of the people who actually were, who lived it and had to grapple with it and deal with it were the voices that dominated, I think our philosophical approach would be much more pragmatic, operational, and useful. But they haven't been, right? It's been the purview of academics and observers, right? The people who aren't in the arena. And that is ultimately what we believe in, right? We believe in the power of struggle. And when I cite quotes, you know, I look at people like James Baldwin, whose new movie, I'm Not Your Negro, right, who was a gay black man in the civil rights movement. And just think about that for a moment, about how difficult that must have been. People like Malcolm X, who people were trying to come at hard, right? Jesse Owens going to right? And you read these quotes from them, like, it's not about the medal. It's about the struggles you encountered internally that you overcame, and on and on and on. And Emerson. And so I am like, just about every quote that I've ever come across that's meaningful to me is somebody who lived it, but not someone who watched it. And I think that is the difference. And it's what's true for every single, I think, military person, which is the leaders you respect lead from the front and have generally been there and done it, right, or are doing it. And that is what we need to admire as a society. It's not the people who stand on the outside and make observations on a clipboard. It's the ones who tie it back to their own personal experience. And I think when you look at our mental health system, and Viktor Frankl argued against this, right, because realize that therapists, they're not bad people. They're good people trying to help folks, and their intentions are pure. But they're taught to completely shut off and disconnect from themselves and from their client. And Frankl argued for just how important the emotional connection was between the therapist and their client, right, and just how important it was that you shared and revealed elements of yourself if you're asking someone else to do that. And that internal contradiction of that system that's asking people to do something that the therapist isn't doing is, I think, the inherent flaw in the process. And you can argue about the overall well-being of the people who are practicing it, right? If we assume that vast majority of people in our culture are unhealthy, it's logical to assume that a number of those people are therapists. And all of a sudden you realize, holy cow, are people who aren't well trying to help people who are struggling? And what does that mean, right? Does that just mean two people, like, that's like you and your buddy trying to solve the world's problems at a bar getting drunk,
right?
You're not going to end up with a positive outcome.
Right.
You're just going to have a hangover at the end. So I think that, to me, is what has to be restored, is the value of life experience over, let's say, book experience. And it's what I learned the hard way as someone who's very well educated, is that stuff's all useful to a point, but it's knowledge. And what I needed was wisdom. And wisdom is when something I encounter outside of myself has a resonance with something that's inside. And it's what, why even I worry, like, all these guys coming home and go to GI Bill and go to college, and college is great. And if you realize how much value you already have, right, and that there's high danger in going and surrounding yourself with millennials for 4 years, which scares the hell out of me, then you might not think that using your GI Bill right now is actually a good like touchstone or a lily pad for coming home from war. But you may say, wait a second, I have problem solving ability, right, and I have a service orientation, which, by the way, are the two skills that they're trying to train kids these days to have in schools,
right?
Because those two things transcend any type of economy, and that to me is like the core of it, right? Where you guys, that and the recognition that all of the answers you're ever looking for are sitting inside of you. And Joseph Campbell has a beautiful quote that the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. And that's where the truth lies. And so that's what, at the end of the day, Warrior Path is about, is helping you navigate to that cave, having the courage to enter it, to see the good, the bad, and the ugly, find out what you want and what's in there. And that's the joy of living, is to find what Campbell called your bliss, but to find what the hell it is that you're here for, and to go do it to the best of your ability for as long as you can, as hard as you can, and to realize that the military was the ultimate launching pad to prepare you for that journey into that cave.
Josh Goldberg. Interesting. All right, I've taken up enough of your time today. I know you have other work you have to do. Josh, I'd love to do this again. I hope you don't mind if I bug you in the future. But
no, you
are speaking the truth to an audience that needs to hear it, because I think a lot of guys don't feel a lot of hope in terms of restoring their life, let alone making it better, given the path that most of us are I don't want to say pushed down, but that most of us head down being treated by the VA. And that is a path of being medicated and going to group therapy. And I would say tending to wallow in that experience as opposed to using it as a springboard to go someplace else and help other people. So, first of all, thank you very, very much for doing this. And I want to wish you and everybody at Boulder Crest all the great success and all the best of luck. And I hope in the future, on occasion, you don't mind if I bug you and bring you back on.
I would be honored, and it's like I said, I have a special love in my heart for the United States Marine Corps and its Marines, and so it's an honor to get to keep company with you, and you're a remarkable man in your own right. And I'd say to anybody, you know, contact us, right? If you want to be part of the program, contact Kevin@BoulderCrestRetreat.org. If you want to talk about expansion, funding, and other activities, then hit me up at Josh@BoulderCrestRetreat.org. And if you get those confused, you know, then we'll sort it out internally. But it's and if you click our names on our website, you know, it'll be a direct link to an email. But you know, just never forget how strong you all are, and never forget how unique and distinct you are, whether you're Marine Corps or any other service. I have the joy of being an outsider in your community, and I get to see it from an outsider's perspective, and it's the most beautiful and most remarkable thing I've ever seen. So just know that even on your worst day, you still are, you know, you are who you think you are, and in the best way. Thank you, Mac.
No. You know, you've been around enough Marines. We love ourselves, man. I think there is solace, though, Josh, in knowing that, hey, you have the tools you need. You know, you have the tools you need. We just need to kind of look at this problem a little bit differently, so we can figure it out, so we can come up with a better solution, a more appropriate solution for you, to get you to the place that you want to be. And that's the thing that I've heard most since I started doing this on June 1st, 2016. I don't want to be medicated anymore. I don't want to feel numb. I want to be me. I know it's going to be a different version of me, but that's what I want. I don't want to go there anymore. And the things that you're talking about, I know are the path. So thank you very much. And I will bug you in the future. And I will tell you this, Josh, on behalf of, you know, everybody you've helped, veterans, Marines, whatnot, thank you for doing what you've done, your own personal journey, and I will tell you this, we have a test that you've obviously passed, and once you get through that test, We don't care who you are, where you come from, because you're helping. And the bottom line is you help us, and we certainly appreciate it. And so congratulations on finding what you were meant to do in life. And thank you. We're obviously the beneficiaries of your hard work. There's no words that that we could ever use that could say thank you appropriately, because it's only when you've been to a funeral for somebody who's survived, you know, multiple combat tours, and then they come home and they find life so helpless that they take their life. It's only when you go to those things and you feel the deep despair that you feel. A beautiful friend of yours, a comrade who took his own life, you're making that not happen as often. And so hats off to you and everybody that does what you're doing, and to Ken and the whole organization. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. It's a privilege.
No, you know what? That's exactly what it is. People ask me, hey, well, why do you do what you do? You know, if you could see what I've seen, the courage and selflessness that I've seen in my life, you would not ask that question. And that's exactly the right answer, man. Thanks, Josh. You bet. That is Josh Goldberg. He is the director of strategy at Boulder Crest Retreats. And we're talking about post-traumatic growth. And I will tell you what, that's the path. That is the path. And great organization. And you know, and it's interesting when you hear him walk us through that. The first thing I heard that disturbed me, well, post-traumatic growth intrigued me. You know, you've heard me tell the story about hearing General Mattis say that. What did he say? Now, I know General Mattis, okay? I worked for him, okay? And I didn't work for him like 17 miles away. I worked for him like 3 feet away. So, and I know how smart he is. And I know, and he's not just a guy who reads books and pretends he's smart. I mean, he drills into it. And if you know something he doesn't know, he sits down and he wants to talk to you about it so he can get smarter. So I've seen that. So when he uses a term like post-traumatic growth, that intrigued me. But when I read a little bit about it, and then I heard Ken Falk talk about the Greatest Generation, and it kind of gave me a little chip on my shoulder, I'll have to say, in terms of they can do it, but we can't. What the hell is that? You know? And then I heard the piece about POWs. And I read a few things about the spirituality that many POWs came back with. The meditating they did, right? All the different places they had to go in order to survive. And the reason... And their ability to make peace with their whole experience. And so there's that chip on my shoulder. It's like, well, wait a minute, I'm not a victim. If those guys can do it, I can do it. You know, what kind of bullshit is this? And so it made me think a ton about what I'd been taught, you know, the paradigm and the kind of prism that I looked through as I viewed the whole issue. And so, and then having Ken on and then having, you know, Josh on today, you know, it completely kind of I always talk to people when they view the world, they have a prism in front of them. A lot of times they don't even know what it is, but they do. It's a prism. And it's cut at a certain angle and it has a certain tint to it. And so it affects, right? It affects the way you view the world. Well, I have to tell you, relative to this, they've affected my prism, right? I view the issue differently now. I view it differently now. And so we've got to get more and more guys into these kind of programs. We've got to help it proliferate, whether it be through fundraising or whatnot, whether it be through corporate endowments to organizations like this, and get more guys through it. Because let me tell you, you know, as you've heard in these two interviews, the Greatest Generation can do it and we can't. That's bullshit. Okay? Now, with no disrespect meant to them, right? They got nothing on us. And so let's get after it. Let's get after it. And so I real honestly, can't thank Josh Goldberg for coming on enough. And let me read you one more email. Hey, Mac, first of all, I loved Josh's candor about being a pussy. Because that is straight up. We would look at him and we would hear his story and we would say, hey, man, you're a pussy. You haven't been through anything. And I love the way he just honestly lays it out there, because it's through that honesty that we accept him, which is very, very cool. And he has obviously proven himself to guys like Ken, who have accepted him onto his team. And so you don't find that very often. In fact, I would tell you just about virtually, other than kind of laborers around organizations like this, guys who are caretakers, guys who run ranches and things like this, you don't see civilians involved too much. So he certainly must be an interesting guy. And I thought his candor was very refreshing on the program this morning. I also had to say that I did chuckle, too, when I heard the term unfuck. It is a technical term in the Marine Corps. It is not just a piece of profanity, right? It is a specific command, and when you're told to do it, you know exactly what they're talking about. Go unfuck yourself, okay? Although it may sound like a general term, when you're told to do it, you know specifically what they're speaking of. And I have to say, in my own life experience, it has proven to be extremely effective. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I've got another email that talks about some stuff going on in Washington, D.C. We'll check on that as a Wednesday hump day edition of Mac Talk continues here on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Don't touch that dial.